Welcome. This is Efrat Sobolewski from YU Connects, excited to share another episode of Candidate, where we feature candid conversations about dating and marriage with experienced guests. Our talented host this evening is Anna Krauss. Anna is the director of NCSY's Shavit Glaubach Fellowship and a licensed social worker. This podcast is anonymously sponsored Le'ilui Nishmas Chanoch Chaim Ben Yaakov HaKohen and by the generous support of the Shlomo and Cindy Sylvian Foundation. Enjoy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to YU Connect's podcast, Candidate, which offers candid conversations about dating and relationships. My name is Anna Krauss, and it is a pleasure to serve as your guest host today. Whether this is your first time tuning in or you are a returning audience member, we thank you for joining our thousands of listeners across the globe as we explore topics together that face our community in the world of dating and relationships. Today, we'll be focusing in on the role of assumptions and mind reading in the dating process, and we're joined by Sarah Gita Sobel. Sarah Gita founded Relationshift in 2019 to provide an exclusively Jewish approach to relationships, marriage, and self-transformation. The Relationshift method is grounded in 13 Torah principles that guide how we approach our relationship with Hashem, ourselves, and others. Integrating these principles is personally transformative and fosters deeper connections and harmonious relationships. Thank you so much, Sarah Gita, for joining us. Sarah Gita lives with her husband and 10 children in Crown Heights. So, Sarah, thank you for making the time for us today, and thank you for being here.
Pleasure.
So to start us off, can you tell us just a little bit about your philosophical outlook on the dating process and how the role of assumptions ties into that? What do assumptions do for us while we're dating?
Dating is such a delicate time because, I mean, you're really evaluating somebody to see if they're going to be your life's partner. So it's so vulnerable. It's a very, very vulnerable time. You're also meeting them based on what you hear from other people. You're trying to draw conclusions from how they show up in very limited space. So it's very vulnerable all around. In general, we draw assumptions and conclusions about the people that we meet from our interactions. And it's a very powerful process to learn to recognize when I've made an assumption, and even that I've made an assumption, which we do all the time, but that I've made an assumption and have the wherewithal to gently explore whether that assumption is true or not. So especially in dating, when it's so delicate and the form that you're meeting in is so delicate, the ability to notice our assumptions and explore whether those assumptions hold true or not could be the difference between giving this relationship a chance or shutting it down.
So let's delve into that, because I think that that's really interesting. You know, you mentioned that from the assumptions are really what's going to allow the relationship to further and to flourish, or, you know, to be cut off and for someone to make the decision that they're done with it. Can you talk a little bit about when someone is noticing that they're making these assumptions, I guess, taking one step back and, you know, what even qualifies assumptions? You know, what is an assumption? And then when somebody notices that they're making an assumption, what should they do with that information?
It's a great question. Let's take an example. You've been out and you're thirsty. I'm speaking from the perspective of the girl. Let's say you're wanting your date to offer you a drink. And it's been a while. You've been walking around. It's hot. And he's not offering you a drink. It's so easy. An assumption that we could easily jump to could be he's not considerate. He's not thoughtful. He's not caring. He's not aware. We could do any sort of assumption. Now, once I've made that assumption, I box myself into a very narrow space, because the way that our assumptions work is that when you know something, you start noticing it all over. You know, if you never heard of a particular word before, and all of a sudden you hear this word and now you're noticing it in conversations all the time. Like, as soon as I've connected to a particular experience, I start noticing it. So this little assumption of like, oh, he's not considerate, is now very possible it could grow. Now, this is an assumption that's very important to recognize, because it could be, maybe he's an inconsiderate person, and that's important information to gather. On the other hand, maybe he's not thirsty. Maybe he's focusing on where you're trying to, where he's trying to bring you, this beautiful spot that he had in mind, and he's focusing on getting you there, that he's just not thinking about water. Maybe he's focusing so hard on the conversation and trying to lead the conversation and really wants to connect with you, and again, is not thinking about water. So I want to notice, okay, I've made an assumption, and be able to question that, is that necessarily so? A very easy way how to test it out is to share. So, for example, saying something, you know, I would love some water. Not hinting, are you thirsty? It's hot outside. Share purely, share simply, be open. You know what? I would love some water. And see how he responds. If he responds, well, why do you need water? Or water's too expensive, or then okay, you can go with that assumption. But more likely than not, he's not out to deprive you of liquid. And more likely than not, it'll elicit a response of, oh, sure, let's try and find a place to buy some water.
I feel like that taps in so nicely to this idea of mind reading because it almost seems like there's two steps in this process. Step one is him not noticing that you're thirsty. But then step two is the conclusion that you draw from it. So the first piece is, oh, he's not reading my mind. He can't just intuit that I'm thirsty. And then the second piece is, okay, therefore something's wrong with him. You know, because he can't intuit what I need, it means that either he knows it, but he's choosing to ignore what I need, or he doesn't know it, but he should know it. You know, he doesn't know that I need water, and any person should know that, you know, on such a hot day like today, someone would need water. So I would love to tap more, you know, taking it piece by piece into that first part of that process of just the mind reading. You know, could you speak a little bit more to that part of the process of what types of things are appropriate to, you know, to think that someone should be able to mind read if there are any? And what kinds of things have you noticed, you know, with your clients and in your experience that people, you know, men and women sometimes think somebody should be able to mind read, but that really, you know, that that can't be done or that we should bring people's attention to?
I love that. We often come with our rules. Like, for example, if it's a hot day, then at this point in the day or at this point in our walk, you should know that I'm thirsty. You should assume that I might need water. Now, that's all fine and good, but I want to notice that that's my personal rule. He could have a very different experience. He could have a different rule. Maybe he has a longer stretch of time till he knows, you know, till he starts feeling thirsty. So this expectation to mind read is also about my inner rules lining up with your inner rules. And that's not necessarily so. So if I'm looking for the quality of consideration, how does he respond to your need when you communicate it? That's a much better indication of his consideration rather than can he anticipate my need? And I would bring this back to the way that we as women, and again, I'm speaking from a feminine perspective. We are born with very nurturing qualities. Hashem gave us special qualities that help us to be mothers to young children and nurture them. And part of our nurturing qualities is anticipating. So before a child is verbal, we need to anticipate whether that child's hungry or thirsty or tired. We have to learn that about them. But in an adult-to-an-adult relationship, the expectation that the other person will anticipate my needs is not appropriate. I'm responsible for my needs, and it's wonderful if he can anticipate it sometimes, but I can't make that an expectation. It's something that I notice beyond the dating world. I mean, we often will do that, you know, like I'll run myself, oftentimes, like a young mother will run herself ragged and wait for her husband to ask her, are you tired? Do you want to go into bed? Like we get things backwards a little bit. We need to be aware, recognize I'm responsible for my needs. Again, it's nice, it's pleasant if he can anticipate it, but it's not an expectation. It's a treat. And if he's not anticipating it, by all means, share.
It's so interesting. You mentioned how sometimes this discomfort can come from a lack of alignment in sort of the internal rules that we build for ourselves. So if my rule of, you know, whatever, every 2 hours, we're gonna run with this offering a drink analogy because I think it's so good to ground us, you know, in a concrete way. If my rule is every 2 hours, you offer someone a water. Or if my rule is, if you're a mensch, you open the door for someone, you know, and let's say their internal rules are different. Their internal rule is saying it's patronizing to open a door for a woman. You know, no woman would want that. Or the opposite. You know, I am sitting there on the date and I think my internal rule is it's patronizing to open a door for a woman. And they're sitting there thinking, it's, you know, it's such a wonderful thing to do for somebody. You know, it's going out of your way. It's showing that you're being considerate. So if for whatever reason our internal rules aren't aligning, how important in your experience as a dating coach is it that someone's rules are in line with one another? Meaning, are these things real areas for concern? You know, if I notice that our internal rules aren't aligning, that's an important sign to pay attention to. Or are there some internal rules where if they don't align, that's okay, and we wouldn't want that to cloud our overall judgment of the person that we're better getting to know?
So what I find is that if my internal rules are too rigid, then that's a relationship killer at any point in the game. It's important to recognize where I have an internal rule and boil it down to what is my value here. Values are concrete, values are important, but my rule system of how to reach those values or how those values are meant to be expressed, that's where I want to be flexible. That's where I want to stretch myself and recognize, you know, someone else's way of reaching that.
That's so interesting. So in that paradigm, going back to, let's say, the car opening, you know, the door opening, let's say my value is that I want to feel respected. And his value is that I want her to feel respected. It could be then, if we're going by values instead of internal rules, that in either scenario, we could be reflecting the same value. You know, if
Exactly.
he opens the door, it's the value of wanting for her to feel respected. If he doesn't open the door, maybe that's his way from his experiences of, you know, showing that he's being respectful of her autonomy or her wishes. So what you're saying is it's more important to try to cue into those values underlying the rules than the rules themselves.
Exactly. And if I enjoy having the door opened, I am free. Once I can respect the person, I'm free to share. You know, I love when the guy opens the door for me. I feel really treated. Or and to like stand there by the door, you know, I can just share with women that are married, a lot of times that sweet gesture falls by the wayside. So what I encourage women to do is if you're noticing that that has gone missing and you want your spouse to start opening the door for you again, like you're ready to be treated that way, then instead of the judgment, right, going to the you don't respect me, like you shared so beautifully, Anna, that it could be it's a an expression of respect. It could be in a larger relationship. There are so many ways that he does respect you that has just has fallen by the wayside. It's not indicative of anything bigger or overarching. Instead, share. Stand by the door with a smile. Wait till he notices you, or tell him that you love it when he opens the door. And that way you can invite that form of treatment again.
I think in this conversation, you know, you're sharing the most direct way for somebody to really get what they want is to not rely on mind reading, you know, or to not rely on the assumptions of everybody should just know to X, Y, and Z, but to really articulate what they want. Sometimes I'm curious, are there ways that our assumptions do serve us in dating? Are there ways in which making, you know, these assumptions or drawing these conclusions are helpful for the dating process, or do you believe that it's always best to really articulate what you want, to be really straightforward, and to sort of leave nothing up to this, in quotes, mind reading space?
So in general, we want to notice our impressions, our inceptions, or our mind reading, and then explore it. Like I like to, while you're on the date, stay with what you're experiencing with the person right there. Note, like make you can make a mental note about, you know, this interaction or that one, and what you've made that mean or what that's meant to you, and then kind of evaluate it later. Take it apart. This is where a dating coach comes in. Take a look at it. Does that mean this? Like, does A equal B? Or maybe it means A equals X. Like that's what a dating coach is for, because in the world of our own assumptions, it's very hard to ascertain, am I getting pulled away by my emotions, whether positive or negative, or is this assumption an important piece of information, and is that valid?
I think that's really great. So what you're suggesting is that it's important to notice. We shouldn't like quiet our assumptions or tell them to go away, but to notice them and then give them space after the date. After the date is done, delve into them where we can really have time more to question them rather than living within them or working within them while they're on the date itself.
Correct.
Hi everyone. I want to share something that's really important to me and my husband. DailyGiving.org/YUConnects makes it super easy to give tzedakah every single day. For just $1 a day, you're joining thousands of others supporting dozens of carefully selected Jewish charities worldwide. $1 may sound small, but together it creates an incredible impact. Over 20,000 people giving every day. My husband and I are proud daily givers, and we hope that you'll join us. And here's the fun part. When you sign up through our special link, dailygiving.org/YUConnects, you'll receive a free candidate swag tote bag to say thank you for joining in this beautiful mitzvah. So don't wait. Head over to dailygiving.org/YUConnects and become a daily giver today. It's simple, it's powerful, and it's one of the most meaningful mitzvos you can do every single day. dailygiving.org/YUConnects. Please take a moment if you are not already a daily giver and sign up today. And now back to our show.
I would love to segue, to a few contexts where I think people do make assumptions on dates, a few specific sort of categories where there are a lot of assumptions being made, and just glean from your experiences working with people in the dating process what some of those assumptions are, and maybe, where we need to challenge those assumptions or how to move forward with them. The first arena where people make a lot of assumptions on a date is about the venue, where the date starts itself. Can you tell us a little bit about venue and the assumptions that people make, and maybe some of those questions that we should ask ourselves or challenge about that?
Yeah, so venue could be really tricky. It's very easy for a girl to assume, okay, this venue is not creative enough, or he didn't put an effort. Like he just, chose the easiest place, or he's not invested. He hasn't put an effort. He's not invested into planning. He doesn't care enough about me to invest into this planning. It could be a place that you really don't like. Right, there's so many things that can go into the venue, and the assumption of that is so easy to really shut down a whole date based on a place. So if you think about it, what are the elements that matter for marriage? Good dating skills don't necessarily equal good marriage skills. The skills that we need for dating, such as planning a place, planning a venue, conversation, we'll look at all those different pieces, but aren't necessarily skills that you're going to need in a marriage. You're looking for values in a person. So if I am the type of, if I'm the type that loves creative and out of the box places, by all means, I can know that about myself. But to put that on someone else and assume that that means they don't care to invest effort, that's an assumption. Let me take a look at the bigger picture. Did they rent a car? Did they arrange a ride or a car? They're taking time out of their evening. There's hours being spent. All of that is effort. So to assume that just because a person doesn't have that creative edge in planning where we go, it doesn't give me a chance to get to know the person's personality and their values and their character qualities, which is really what's going to make a difference in a marriage.
It's funny, you talk about things that the venue, it's like you show up, and if that's where you base all your assumptions, then your date could almost be done in the first 2 minutes. You almost don't need the rest of the date. I'm curious, some of the other things which people can be cued into in the first couple minutes are how somebody's dressed for a date. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about presentation. And obviously, these things are important. So I'm curious to hear your perspective on how much importance or how much weight to give things like dress, or also how someone relates to money, which may tie in to venue a little bit, but if they what they order, how they tip or not tip, if they seem like they're thrifty about the type of place that they choose, these things that we can see in the first couple minutes of a date. I would love to hear your perspective on the assumptions that we can or should draw from them, or if you really feel like, there are no assumptions that should be drawn from them.
So dress is a big one. Dress definitely speaks about the person. At the same time, once again, dress is not necessarily indicative of the deeper character, personality, intelligence of the person that you're meeting. So I want to notice if I'm shut down from what the other person is wearing. That would be something that I would notice and kind of put on the side. In other words, does this indicate the type of person that they are? Or is it just happen to be the outfit that they're wearing, right? I don't know. Let's sit and find out. Also, clothing can easily be changed. You might be seeing somebody who in casual clothes and make the assumption that they're this type of person, or in more formal clothes and think that they're that type of person. But as you get to know them, they may be both. They may have a range of who they are and how they present themselves. Like we said before, that would really fall into the category of just notice and see if you can enjoy the personality or the conversation or the person, and if the dress is really not indicative. I had a lady once who the date showed up in a grandfather sweater, and to her it was like horrifying, no sense of style, like buttons over the stomach, like what is that? But after talking it through, we looked at dress can be changed. If you don't like the sweater, I assure you, if you find him to be a quality guy and you're respect, you know, like, and you can respectfully ask him to wear a different style sweater once you're married, like, it probably won't be a big deal. He's probably not married to that sweater. Probably happens to be more of like a yeshivish guy. Like, he just didn't notice his mom bought him the sweater and that's what he's wearing. Like, okay, right? So it turns out they ended up getting married. It was like a happy end to that story, but it was a big stressor. It was scary. It is very vulnerable. So that would be something like file it away, see if you can see the whole picture. And it could be that it's just a detail.
It's interesting. A lot of the examples, that we're going through seem to be part of this very sort of superficial. It sounds like the thread that links them is the superficial details don't necessarily mean the deep values that we're attributing to them. So this woman and the sweater, I don't know her, but maybe, her problem was that she thought that this sweater indicated something deeper. It's not that she hates the sweater so much that she's like, I'm not going to marry him because of the sweater, but she's worried, what does this mean about this guy? Is he totally out to lunch? Does this mean that whatever she thinks that the sweater indicates about him? And I love that line that you used, I don't know. Let's like sit here on the date and figure this out. Like let's explore this further. And I'm just curious if you have any tools that you give to your daters when they notice, they take that minute and they do notice that they're making an assumption, are there any tools that you give them in terms of what to do next?
So there's two things. One is I call it PASTA, make PASTA. PASTA stands for pause, acknowledge, soothe, and then turn around. So the pause is just whenever I'm feeling something or noticing something, just pause a moment and acknowledge the fact that I'm noticing or feeling something. It's very validating. It's important to validate that I'm having an experience, or I'm having there's something that's niggling at me. And then soothe. What I do often is get back into your own body, relax. Oftentimes, once we notice something, we tense up. Our toes, our jaw can get tense, our hands. So just I would invite to do a body scan, get back into your own body, ground yourself, notice colors around you, notice how your feet are feeling in your shoes. Probably not too good if you're on a date. Drop your tongue in your mouth. It's actually a funny thing to do, but like you don't have to do it obviously, but it's a great way how to quickly loosen your jaw and just kind of get back into your own space. Recognize that you're okay, right? Nothing happened. There's nothing dangerous. Nobody's forcing you to get married right this minute. You're just collecting information. And then the turnaround is depending on what is triggering me at that moment. But there's like a bunch of different tools for what would help me turn the situation around, like whether it means turn my perspective back on the conversation or remind myself not to expect for him to anticipate my needs and share what I'm wanting right now. Or perhaps it's to find what I call the LCI. I mean, there's a bunch of different tools that we use for that last piece, the turnaround, how to get back into the date, back into engaging with this person in front of me.
Sorry, I have to ask, what does LCI stand for?
LCI stands for love, care, and intention. So, for example, let's say the guy shares that he's in debt, right? You're talking about finances, and he mentions that he's in debt. So that could be a really scary trigger. Nobody wants to get married to somebody who's financially unstable or who can't manage money. It's scary, right? So what I invite girls to do is before I rush into, assumptions about what this means that he's, let's say, irresponsible or he's not going to be able to care for me or, like what this means about him. And before I start questioning him as far as how much and what are you doing about it and like getting into almost like an interrogation, I want to relax, right? And acknowledge an LCI. LCI means what was his intention? It could be something he's caring about. It could be a love or that not so much on a date, but oftentimes there's an intention. So something that she can reflect could be before we get into discussing it, the fact that he's being honest that there's a debt going on is telling me something about his quality that he has. Maybe he's accountable. Maybe he's being honest. So I want to reflect that before I get into the discussion. So
Right,
I can
really
say,
vulnerable. Yeah.
yeah, it's very vulnerable. Like, I appreciate you sharing that. That was really accountable. And that gives safety in the conversation to then talk about it. He can, he'll probably share more about it if he's anyways put it out there. Tell the story of what happened and what he's doing about it. And if she still has a question at the end of his share, she can ask, how do you suppose this will affect your future family? Something that's open-ended that gives him safety to share without interrogating.
You shared a little bit about some contexts where people make assumptions, but it doesn't necessarily map onto how, in quotes, real life with this person, being married to them would pan out. Are there any other categories or examples that you think are really prevalent where the type of assumptions we make from a date don't really track onto the ultimate marriage that we would have with this person?
Conversation is a big one. The environment that you're trying to converse, I mean, you're coming from different worlds on a date and you're trying to bridge your worlds and talk to each other. And it might not be as easy and smooth flowing as conversations that you'd have with a really good friend. And we want to recognize that, yes, you want to have good conversations with your hopefully future spouse, but we also want to validate that. It took time to build a relationship. And also with a friend, you share such similar experiences that with your spouse, you don't. So there's a certain artificialness to a date and the conversations that you're having that really is not indicative of the way it would pan out in real life. So if there are times where you have good conversation, like if you have, like, I would say, sparks of good conversation, and you're also noticing the qualities and the values are matching up, then making that assumption about the conversation does not necessarily mean that this is or indicate or reflect what conversation will be like once you're married and you're sharing a life together.
We were speaking ab about signs at the beginning of a date, like venue or cost, and how these can sort of serve as symbols, which could ultimately hinder, the dater's ability to see the real qualities of the person that they're dating. Do you have any examples from working with your clients of somebody who either did or didn't make an assumption based off of what they saw on a date, where later on it ended up being very different than what they saw on the date?
I can think of one particular number of examples, but let's say with money, I had one girl who was very concerned that the guy didn't know how to handle money. Like he would pay the taxi driver and then not ask for change, or he paid a lot for, too much for a drink when like maybe there was another option, or it just didn't seem like he knew what he was doing with the money. And what we looked at was, yes, these are important things, but he as a whole was a responsible person. So in that context, being that he had the quality of responsibility, the logistics of caring for money, correct. He didn't have a natural sense for it. He was, in yeshiva for however many years, and he wasn't financially responsible for himself yet. But if you can see that the person themselves are responsible and the other values are intact, then it's very likely that that responsibility will extend to money as well. Might take some time, but it will get there. And that's actually what happened. Once they were married and once he had assumed responsibility for supporting the family, he developed responsibility around money very well.
I love the idea of, plugging into those values, creating these open spaces, not interrogating, not like jumping down the rabbit hole of the assumption leads to the next thought, leads to the next thought. And especially the sort of pasta tools, we'll call them pasta tools of how to jump back into being present in the date. I'm curious before we sort of conclude our conversation, are there any other things that you would want to leave with our listeners just in terms of how to stay open to the whole picture, how to not dive too deeply into these assumptions or into the, desire that we all have that our partner should just be able to mean read our minds and magically know what it is that we're thinking. Where should we leave our daters in terms of, what they should do next?
I think this piece is very important, which is that our feelings are very important. Like if you, let's just talk about a physical feeling for a moment. If you touch a hot stove, the sensation of heat is crucial. It would be dangerous if you didn't feel a sensation of heat. And there are some people that don't have that. On the other hand, if I'm afraid of the sensation of heat to the point where I can't cook myself an egg or take something out of the oven, then I'm crippling myself. So it's similar with our feelings. Our feelings are important indicators. They're giving me information, but I don't want to, and I don't want to ignore them because that's dangerous. And there's an indication there. At the same time, I don't want to be so like overwhelmed by the feelings that it paralyzes me or it doesn't allow me to see further. So with our feelings, what I would really leave everyone with is take note and then explore. And it's very possible that with a new perspective that you discover, sometimes we're not even aware that there's another perspective than the one we're having. But the willingness to explore and discover a new perspective can open up something very special.
Well, Sarah Gita, thank you so much for sharing your perspective with us. I think that there are a lot of really practical tools and a lot of really good language that, people can draw from this in terms of noticing the assumptions they're making, noticing the mind reading, and thinking about what to do next in terms of better getting to know the person's deeper values and more sort of core traits about them. And I want to thank our listeners, as always, for joining us in this candid conversation on this episode of Why You Connect Candidates. So, thank you so much for joining with us.
You're welcome. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you to our gracious host and guests this evening. Please email us at yuconnects@yu.edu to suggest future dating and relationship building topics and guests for your enjoyment. Candidate at YU Connects.